Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Casterbrus podcast. Yes, with a K. Available on Casterbrus.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audioboo. It all started as a mild curiosity by these Casterbrites, and now it's turned into quite a spirit of adventure, don't you think? Listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name's Christian Corley. With me for this week's Casterbrus podcast with K is Brian Terranova.
Hello.
Hello, Brian. And Gareth Kavanagh, editor of Vought Vought magazine and general great guy. Hi, Gareth.
Yes, hello. 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 Well, think of me as the brigadier of the equation, then.
You know. Yeah, if you like. Yeah, the brigadier
of the podcast. When needed, when you lot are off gallivanting.
Shall we? Let's do this.
Oh, stop.
Oh, it's slick now, isn't it? It's so slick. Now, we don't have James this week, unfortunately. He may come along a little bit later. We'll see how that turns out. We're here for the weekly podcast. We're going to talk about a few different things. I think I sent an email to the guys last night, so they should have some sort of vague idea of what it is which we're going to be talking about. I hope they do. I did wonder then about whether to have the microphone in shot or not. I thought, no, I won't do that. And I thought, hey, yeah, why not? It looks kind of cool. So there's my microphone there. And how are you, dear listener? Dear viewer, we're on Hangouts this week. We are live, and later on we won't be live. If you're watching us later, you know, with the benefit of we're being recorded for YouTube. So you'll be on Casterbrus TV watching us. So if you're doing that, hi. If you're on that other thing that we use, Stitcher.com, this will just be an audio-only thing. And a lot of what's just happened won't make any sense to you at all. Same as if you're on Audioboo or iTunes. Sorry about that, but, you know, you can come in on Monday afternoon and watch us, talk to us, and all that kind of thing. I'm going to go to Gareth. Gareth, we haven't talked to you for a few weeks. How did you enjoy the Doctor Who finale?
Oh, you little tinker. first of all, just to apologise to your listeners, viewers, well, it's listeners for me, because we've turned off my web camera very, very wisely, because I'm sat here in my underpants, and I don't think that would be good for your viewing figures. But if you've got anyone out there with a weak bladder, if you can hear running water, that's because you can, because I'm waiting for the plumber to come round. So apologies in advance for anyone in a place where they can't get to the toilet. What did I think of the finale? It had some lovely ideas. It looked terrific, but it didn't quite make sense. I had lots and lots of debates after with people trying to get my head around things, sort of what use is Bones to the Cybermen, and that didn't make sense. And in fact, lots of things didn't make sense. So, yeah, it looked nice. Quite like the Master, Missy Master. That was okay. That was nice. And I suppose the whole shock with Danny being bumped off, and that was sensitively handled, and I quite like the idea of the hard drive full of souls. That had some. There's lots of lovely ideas. It felt like someone had just dipped into the ideas bag, threw a load of stuff up in the air, let it drop, and then had to make a story out of that, like a little exercise. So that's how we end up with the finale we did. But hey, you know, it's been a good season other than that. I even like the one with the trees, which everyone seems to hate. And I thought Capaldi was okay. So it's nearly there for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it was good.
Okay.
But the finale was
Yeah. We've had plenty of time to reflect on it as well. That's the other thing. So I'm afraid sometimes things tend to... Often things tend to improve, don't they? Usually improve. Sometimes they get worse, but usually it's...
You mean on reflection?
Yes, yeah.
But having said that, and I'm going to be really brutally honest here as well, I think that we look at these things in far more than else. I'll tell you what made me think that. There was a piece on Bleeding Cool last week about the latest X-Men film, Days of Future Past. And it had this big news story, 10 things that are completely wrong with Days of Future Past. And it listed all of these plot holes and things that were patently ludicrous. And to be quite honest with you, I hadn't picked up a single one of them on watching it. So I just watched it, enjoyed it, went, yeah, that kind of works. I'd forgotten that Professor X had been disintegrated in the previous film and I was all right. So I had just forgotten, and I just sat down and I just took it on its merits as a piece of entertainment, ate my popcorn, went home and got on with my life. So, which I guess is what 98% of people would do with Doctor Who. It's only us nitpickers that look at it. That isn't to let people off the hook for crap plotting, but I think that perhaps, you know, I read that article and I thought, right, okay, maybe this is the kind of person I am with Doctor Who. Perhaps it's not always a good thing.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I know what you mean. I read the same article, I think, and if it wasn't the same article, it was one extremely similar.
I think it was.
It probably was, and I think I would have probably noticed one or two of them, and I haven't seen it yet, actually. So it's a bit of a bugger, because obviously I'm going to be looking for one or two of them. But one or two of those were the sort of thing that I would kind of notice. But that doesn't mean, you know, that it's a good thing or a bad thing. And, yeah, compared to the complexity of the actual comic book X-Men universe, which has gone completely mental over the years, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing for me when I saw the film. You know, I always look at these comic book films. You know, there are certain things that kind of do need to be correct for me and other things that are flexible because it's 50 years worth of history. So trying to cram all of that 50 years into a handful of movies is not really going to work out that great. You know, for instance, with Spider-Man, he needs to get bitten by a spider to get his powers. You know, Uncle Ben needs to die and so on like that. Those things that form who he is. The rest of the stuff you have flexibility with. So with the X-Men, it's the same. When I watched the movie, I noticed a couple of things which weren't completely comic book accurate, but I was okay with it because it was a good film. And it's not like they were blindingly obvious as a bad call or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right, and I don't know. I mean, I watched it with Sarah, the finale, and she loved it. You know, and she just thought it was a terrific TV, very exciting. On you go. I don't know. We think about these things too deeply, maybe, but then perhaps it needs someone to be thinking about it because otherwise it doesn't make sense.
I wonder maybe because we're all kind of, I'm not going to say we're all wannabe showrunners, but we've all got a little showrunner inside of us, and we maybe think, I wouldn't have done that. Why has he done that?
Oh, yeah. It's like the football, isn't it? It's completely, you know, when you're down to Middlesbrough, you're thinking, what's he doing that? What's he playing that for? You know, what's all this about?
Well, not often these days, mate, but yeah, go on.
But for many of the miserable thin years that you were there, you know, when Middlesbrough couldn't buy a win, I'm sure that you'd cook that one over in your head 100 times.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah.
Well, often it goes higher than that, doesn't it? It goes up to the chairman. Why has he hired that manager?
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, but we're not fantasy football team people, but I think in futures, you know, I mean, I think, oh, you know, would I have it that late? Would I have it earlier? Where would I put it relative to the X Factor? Would I take it on? Would I sidestep it? Does it matter? Yeah. We're exactly the same as the football nerds, except we don't go and trash town centres when they bring back the wrong Cybermen.
Okay. Alright, we'll move on from there because we do have a few things to get through, and obviously we want to talk to Gareth about whatever it is Gareth's doing at the moment. I want to try something new for the podcast now. It's not entirely new, it's just the benefit of using the Hangouts, which we are this week again. I just want to click this button here.
And you've gone silent.
And then we should all see this. No, that doesn't work. That is a shame. Can you guys see that?
Well, no, all I can see is the microphone thing. Come on.
Okay, never mind that, because we don't really need it, actually. And, you know, I've used it, but, you know, in theory, we don't actually need it. All I need to do is... I don't know, just like a message from Jim there. Well, all I actually really, really, really need to do is just go over here, and you should be able to hear this. If I fade it in. No, it's not working. Hold on, we'll try that again. Oh, slick.
I can scarcely believe it myself.
It's an awful.
At 51 years in time and space is upon us, yes. Let's celebrate with one of these sweets now. Where are they? Yes, try Marco Polo.
And then the Doctor begins to dance. That was John Guiler.
Really?
It was.
I thought that was William Hartnell.
That was genuinely our friend John Guiler.
I thought you'd moved on from the Ouija board that you'd been undertaking with him onto something more substantial. No, that was lovely. Of course it was John.
It was good, yeah. He put that on Facebook yesterday. I said, you might want to put that on YouTube, John. It's really good. So he did. And I wonder that... He does all these really cool things. I wonder if anyone else has ever used Morpho. Are you guys aware of it? I mean, Brian, you use a lot of iPhone apps. Are you aware of Morpho?
No, I don't use that.
Have you heard of it?
No.
Right, okay. So what it does, you take a photo with it, and then you plot out the eyes and the mouth just by tapping, and you size the eyes and everything. So what John will have done is take a photo of William Hartnell from a box, and then he'll have recorded his voice, and then the software animates the mouth. And then it brings in some music at the end and makes the character dance and stuff. It's really very clever. I've never seen it work so anyone do anything with it so well as that.
Wow,
it's really entertaining.
Oh, you groovy people! I only use the calculator on mine. Oh, that's oh, it's still 1998 on my phone.
Is it really?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like the Doctor. I can only use 4% of my devices, but I make it work.
Do you have a flip phone? Are you one of those guys?
No, I did have one of those. I had one when it came out, and the best thing about it was I was showing off in the pub. And I did this thing, you know, I said, oh, and it's just like the communicators off Star Trek, and I flipped it to open it, and it flew off and went in the canal.
Yeah.
In the canal?
In the canal, yeah, that was amazing. Manchester. You're on this pub by the canal, yeah. And the open just went zip, and sank. And I don't think I was covered for water damage then, as most people don't seem to be. So that was quite embarrassing. So I ended up with a horrendous old Mars Trium for a year while I was locked into my contract. So yes, I did.
Is that a chocolate bar? Mars Trium? Is that like a chocolate bar?
It's an ancient phone. Look it up. Okay. Yes.
Indeed. Okay. Well, I would like to say that we're going to have John Guiler on next week, but we're probably not. However, he may be on the week after that.
Oh, can I put in a request?
What's your request?
Can I put in a crest? He always does doddery old ancient, you know, cuddly Uncle Hartnell. Can he try doing miserable, spiky, grumpy Hartnell from the first sort of couple of series?
Okay.
Well, the first couple of stories. Which I think's not as much fun as Billy Fluff's, but, you know, let's see if he can capture a bit of that early, you know, that early spark and
I'll ask him and see what he can do.
They'll tell me to shoo you cheeky young man.
Okay. Now then, we've had some interesting comments from Jenna Coleman this week. You know, we've been waiting for her to leave, in a good way, because she's turned Clara around, clearly, obviously not single-handedly, but what she's done with Clara...
Is there a good way of waiting for her to leave?
There isn't a good way, is there? No, there isn't. No, there isn't. So not in a good way. In a bad way. We've been kind of preparing ourselves. There are fans who don't like it, but then there's always fans who don't like Companion, so I'm not going to get pinned up on the wall about that. Well, what I am trying to say, though, ladies and gentlemen, is that Jenna Coleman's recently said, actually, what is it she's actually recently said? It's kind of... It's not clear, basically. She's left in a little hint that she might actually, despite our expectations, not be perhaps leaving Doctor Who in the Christmas episode. Which, while I bring up the quote, it does leave me to wonder whether maybe she might actually leave mid-season, which hasn't been done since Doctor Who returned in 2005. She says, and I am quoting, this is from an interview that she gave to Digital Spy, and there is a quote here somewhere. I've just lost it. She says that she's addicted to him and the life and the TARDIS, and I don't think there's really a way back for her now that she's had a taste of this life and him. I don't really think she could go back to just having a normal life again. Now, this is a recent interview from, I think it was Monday or Tuesday last week at the launch of the Series 8 DVD. So this is in context with the us knowing everything that happened in Death in Heaven and the finales. What happened to Danny Pink? Yeah. So, What do we think? Do we think that's someone saying that she's staying on a little bit longer, or there's a lot to go through in the Christmas episode?
That's what I would read it. I'd read it that, yeah, she's probably back. I'm guessing that after their exciting adventure on the planet Christmas, Father Christmas will leave an extra special present under the tree, which will be some interdimensional gateway to wherever Danny's been backed up on the hard drive, because there's always a backup. And you know, magically he'll appear for Christmas. Everything will be whizzy. They'll enjoy some turkey. And business as usual.
Okay.
I can't argue with that, to be honest. I think he's right. I do want to ask one thing, though. You said we haven't had a mid-season companion leaving since the new series began. Are we not counting Series 7 since it was a split season?
Fans do count Series 7 as one series, don't they?
We should.
I don't think the BBC do, though.
Well, do they? Well, it's collected together as Series 7.
Yeah, and they don't call it Series 7 and 8. They call it 7A and 7B. So to me, that's just, hey, you know, it's still Series 7. Here's our fancy name. We just split them
and we had Martha rejoin halfway through Series 4.
Yeah.
We did. Yeah, you're quite right. We did, yeah. And
that was quite unexpected at the time.
And Mickey joined and left.
Mickey, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, okay.
That's true.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, so I wrong on that, yeah. She's back, but, yeah.
What, full-time or for a few episodes or...
Here's my thing. If she's back, if there is a magic fix that brings Danny back, my hope is that it will be Jenna and Danny on the TARDIS, and they actually go to alien planets, and they don't bring them back to their earthly lives every day. Because think about it, they're going to have to explain how Danny's back alive anyway. So the two of them are probably going to want to escape that reality for a bit. At least my hope is that. I would think that just traveling with the Doctor and getting a series, or at least part of a series, where they're just on the go, like Doctor Who is so good at. You know, it's that great escapism that you just leave your life, you leave this world behind, you go do all these fantastic things, and since it's a time machine, you always think you can come back the day you left, and of course you never do, you know, but I would love to see that. I would love to get away from Earth, especially since this last series was so Earth-heavy, and as we had mentioned a couple times, there were a couple stories that would have been better not placed on Earth. And I would just like to see them actually traveling, because I would like to see Danny be properly on the TARDIS, be a companion, because I really liked his character. And if he's truly going to be a Christmas gift for Clara, I would like to see us get some good use out of him.
I don't know. You see, dramatically, I'm not sure that that works, because there's an element where you're repeating Rory and Amy, married couple traveling together.
Yeah.
But also, I think dramatically, I think whatever happens next, I think probably Clara has to make a choice, because the last season was all about her having a foot in one camp, you know, traveling with the Doctor but keeping her boyfriend and life at home, and that didn't really work for her. And I think maybe if she says she's hooked on it, she's traveling, it'd be more satisfying for me if she's made the decision, and as you say, she's out there rattling around the TARDIS in the blue box, not out there for an exciting adventure and then back for tea with Danny and watching the X Factor. I'm not sure you'd do that again.
Well, there is also another option, which is that Danny isn't going to be the magic gift under the Christmas tree. True. And that we will find out that Clara is actually pregnant, and that's how Orson Pink and his timeline can become a reality. And so Clara wouldn't want to travel because, you know, she's becoming she's an expecting mother, you know, wouldn't want to travel, and that means. So there are other options, and there's certainly that could lend to her leaving at Christmas as well, or early on in the next series.
And there's, you know, there's always a possibility of her hooking up with Orson Pink as well.
That would be weird.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I think the companions actually have been difficult since it came back. I think only Rose has really had that cut through in terms of being a big character in her own right and being loved and recognised by the public. I think the others have come close to varying degrees, but have never quite reached that level again. So it's obviously a difficult thing to do, a difficult thing to create and sustain and to keep interesting.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said to keep interesting, because I think that's one of the big things they need to do. I think they need to make the companion interesting again. And not to say that they haven't been. I don't want to downplay anybody that's been a companion these past few years, but it's all been the same staple, modern-day Earth human of some kind. So they're not really that different. There isn't anything new to learn about them, despite the fact that they may have different careers and slightly different personalities. So I would like to see, I know they talked about maybe an alien companion and so on, but personally, I'd like to see a companion from the past again. Even if they did something, and Moff seems, obviously, with this past season, to be going back to the 60s roots of the show quite a bit, I guess, you know, carrying on the anniversary, but even if they did somebody from the 60s or 70s, somebody that has an understanding of technology, so isn't, like, completely lost in all of this world that they're getting into, but just someone who has a different understanding, a different outlook on life. And at least if we're going to hit modern day Earth quite a bit, at least they can be bewildered by it a little bit. I'd like to see something new in that realm. I mean, I'm not saying those eras particularly. It could be a future companion, could be even a far past companion. I would just like to see something that hasn't been done in the new series in that respect before.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And we almost did have it, too. They almost gave us Clara that way, and he changed his mind midstream and made her modern day again, which I think is a shame.
Oh, if she'd stayed the Victorian governess, yeah, that would have been interesting. Yeah, well, Captain Jack, actually. Captain Jack's the only mold breaker that I can think of, and then, as you say, they kind of change their mind on that and give him his own spin-off where he doesn't quite work in that either. But
yeah. Yeah, well, that, you know, the only issue with Jack was the same thing they keep doing generally with the second companions outside of Rory was they gave him to us for such a short span of time. You know, when they gave us Mickey, they did the same thing. They took him away. Even Martha in Series 4 was for a very short trip. Rory was the only one who really hung around. And Danny just never became one. So, Jack was interesting.
Yeah, that's true. But Rory was orbiting Amy. He very rarely was allowed to have a direction of his own. He was always considered in conjunction with Amy. And was there for a lot of the time for the light relief. But very well played. But you're right, that second companion very rare, gets even less room to shine in. Probably Russell did it best with Mickey and Rose now, I think back. I think the whole sort of jealousy and bullying and exclusion storyline in Series 2, you know, that horrible scene where Mickey's been holding a lever for an hour and they forget to tell him to let go and they think it's hilarious, I thought was really, really good and very interesting writing. And you know that sense you get where friendships become more and more mutual to the exclusion of others. I thought it was a very sophisticated take on that. So, yeah, maybe more of that kind of thing. I don't know. It's a tricky one, that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I remember when I first saw that, just really thinking it was so out of character for the Doctor. But you're right, it really did add a layer to the story and to the characterizations of everybody and how they all interacted. So while it may have been out of character for what I knew of the Doctor, clearly he's evolved himself in the new series. And you know, it's one thing that we can always take into account with the new companions, too, how they'll all interact.
And certainly with Capaldi being so, so gruff with people, you know, that would really make for, like, how is he going to make a new friend? Would be a very interesting thing to see. You know, he had Clara still there, and he tried to keep her the best he could with his previous companion his previous incarnation helping him out. I do think I would really like to see how Capaldi might make a new friend, because that would be very interesting.
Well, I think one thing that we saw with the Matt Smith years on Doctor Who is how people are different, and how the Doctor is different with different companions. Because clearly a completely different relationship with Clara than what he had with Amy. So that would probably come into it as well. I think it's an exciting. I mean, it's always exciting to get a new companion, and if it's there are things about bringing in new companions that mistakes have been made in the past. So Clara season one, for instance, or Martha's family. There's two examples of things that we can stay away from. But I mean, I would like a future or historical companion, personally, or alien companion. The Jenny Blue would have been a good companion, I think.
Here's a question. If we were to go alien companion, would you want an Adric type where he looked human, she looked human, or would you want an alien that had prosthetics, some kind of alien quality to them that would make it a little awkward when they're wandering around modern day Earth?
Good question. That's a very good question. I'm going to let Gareth answer that first. Gareth? Okay, Gareth's busy at the moment. So, I think it depends on. Let's do it. Go for prosthetic. Do it. Yeah. To hell with it. Do it.
I'll tell you, when I heard with the Paul McGann Big Finish plays, when they brought in Keres and they described him, I thought, what a great thing. You know, and they did very little of people calling him out. They did it. It was there. So it's maybe not something you need to dwell on, but I did think it was interesting that, you know, people would look at him at first and be a little freaked out or so on. But one of the best stories that they did with him, they ended up in, like, the 18th century England during a carnival, where people just thought he was a character from a freak show.
Right.
And it was great. It was a neat idea because it played into somewhere that he could actually seamlessly blend in. Yeah. And I'm sure they could do tons of good stuff with that, with a character that had some sort of prosthetics or something that was different from us. So I'd like to see that myself.
Yeah, that would be good. Good to see that on screen. Definitely.
And it would be neat to have it be a new alien race that we have not heard of yet. You like, rather than try and bring in a Sontaran or something like that, you know, like let's create something new.
Do something new. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like maybe have a pasty on the forehead. No, someone's done that, haven't they?
Yeah.
Never mind. Or ridge nose. No, someone's done that as well, haven't they? Yeah. What about really big floppy droopy ears? No, someone's done. No, they've done that.
How about green skin? No. Okay.
No. Blue skin? No. Let's face it, Star Trek's kind of cornered the market in aliens with humanoid looks with slight prosthetics, haven't they?
But budget-beating prosthetics. I don't want to see a draconian coming on board, you know? Pretty much, yeah. Okay, Strax. Yeah, he's funny, he can be entertaining, but he's pretty much single-handedly killed the Sontarans. You know, I don't see anybody bringing them back unless somehow some writer some way has a story that can just restore people's faith in them being villains. So I don't want to see them take something that already is pre-existing, unless they do like a Thal or something like that, where you don't need prosthetics but you still have an alien, you know, whatever. Yeah. But I want to see something new. I want to learn something new.
Yeah, let's learn something new. Okay, we've lost Gareth temporarily. He's hopefully going to be back shortly. If I can just type properly on my SMS message thing to him there. Okay. Well, let's just go back to the what we're going to be talking about today, without getting away from things too much and overlook the bad news I've just received by email. And where are we? We have podcast and Lego. Lego. Is the slightly confusing situation around Doctor Who Lego at the moment, isn't it? With because character building had their little block building thing, or character had their little block building thing called character building, And that was basically filling in the hole for Lego Doctor Who, because lots of Doctor Who fans wanted Lego Doctor Who, because Lego's gone crazy with licensed properties over a few years with Star Wars and Batman and The Hobbit. And have I missed anything there?
Spider-Man, Indiana Jones, Iron Man.
Yeah, Marvel stuff, yeah, anything really. Yeah. And so lots of Doctor Who fans wanted some Doctor Who Lego rather than building their own. Which that's a great thing about Lego, you can do that anyway, so having a licensed property doesn't really matter all that much. Use your imagination, build. Look, I mean, you know, look what I did. I made a bed, you know? It's that easy. It's Whoa. That easy. Yeah.
That's talent, man.
I know. It took me, what, as long as 10 minutes. Yeah, so, you know, Lego is ready for the taking when it comes to sort of building bits and bobs with it, dear listener. So we think you'll agree with us when we say that it isn't really a massive deal for Doctor Who fans. However, they are nevertheless excited by the prospect of Doctor Who flavored Lego, let's call it. And I think Doctor Who would do really well. BBC Worldwide would do really well out of it, and I think Lego would do quite well. Look, it's an aeroplane spaceship type thing now. Wow! I could sit here all afternoon building.
That only took a few seconds.
Exactly. It's crazy. It's crazy what you can do with Lego. So we will hopefully get Gareth back shortly. But on the matter of Doctor Who Lego, is it? Hello, Gareth. Welcome back. Is it a case with Doctor Who Lego that we can maybe... all just too much? Is he back?
Hey, yo.
Hello. We're just talking about Doctor Who Lego.
Am I back?
You're back.
You are. You're back. You're on air, yeah.
Hey.
Okay, so we're talking about Doctor Who Lego and the news that the Lego company had rejected the ideas that have been put forward. But apparently they haven't... rejected them out of hand, and although curiously they rejected them in favour of Big Bang Theory. Like, I don't know why anyone would want a Big Bang. If there's anything you could make yourself out of Lego, it's a Big Bang Theory living room, isn't it?
Yeah, it was just people sat round in their living room, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let's do a Men Behaving Badly Lego kit, you know?
Why? Let's do
1 Foot in the Grave Lego kit with... I'll do a Faulty Towers Lego kit with Basil falling off the ladder all the time, you know?
Now you're in.
Sorry, Brian.
No, I'm just surprised that Big Bang Theory would warrant that kind of attention for Legos. I mean, what is it about it? You know, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Marvel, Doctor Who, I get. You see that? You can make spaceships and so on. What does Big Bang Theory have? I just don't understand it. I don't understand. I honestly
it's got that ship that used
to
be in Blossom in it, hasn't it? That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that, James?
Coronation Street. Now you're talking. Coronation Street Lego. That's Gareth. That's Gareth.
That's me. Hello.
That's Gareth. Yes, it's not James. James isn't here.
Yeah, I corrected myself. What were you saying, Gareth?
I want Coronation Street Lego. You know, this would be nice.
Do you want like 21st century Coronation Street Lego, or do you want like 1975 Coronation Street Lego?
Do I have to answer that?
I know the answer.
The answer's obvious, isn't it? Yes. I'd have that little street, little pub. I could have little interiors of the rovers.
Or you could go back further. You could go back further. Have it like a 1960 Coronation Street Lego, right? But it's in two parts. You get one part of the street with one box, and the other part of the street with the other box.
Yeah, I'm there. Have they done Jack the Ripper Lego and stuff like that?
What?
Well, you know, little. We could have them little murderous street scenes and little alleys and ale houses and strumpets.
Well, it's Ripper Street, isn't it? We'll probably coppers. Talk about Ripper Street later. Actually.
Yeah, totally. Lego Ripper Street. I'm there. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's miles better than Big Bang Theory, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. I think we've agreed we can all think of something that's better than Big Bang Theory. So what were they playing at?
Who knows? But, I mean, you know, some really inventive Doctor Who themed sets by fan designers have been created. So hopefully at some point the Lego hierarchy, the powers that be at Lego with their various shares in oil companies, I'm joking, I don't know, honestly, that's just satire, they will hopefully, not after that, they will hopefully decide in favour of Doctor Who Lego. Oh dear. Do you know what I should have done when I did that as well, when I said I had that little line about them having their shares?
Yeah.
Hey. But I didn't. I didn't, did I? Because we've got all these tools and we're playing. The biggest tool of the lot is playing with them a lot. Matt Smith. Yeah, Matt Smith has a new movie role. Did you see that?
Is this the Terminator?
No, it's not the Terminator. He's in Terminator. Genisys, obviously, as you probably know, dear viewer slash listener. And we do have a viewer, apparently, unless that was Gareth waiting to get back in.
Yeah, this is what happens when you generate your movie titles on predictive text, isn't it?
Yes. He's been cast in another film. I mean, this guy's, I mean, considering, you know, it was David Tennant who was set to be, you know, the Doctor who does really well in Hollywood. It's kind of like he's the Doctor who doesn't do really well in Hollywood, but the guy before him and the guy after him are the guys who do really well in Hollywood.
Oh, well. What is the film? Tantalise me.
Tantalise you. Well, I've already tantalised you. It's called Patient Zero. Not Prisoner Zero, Patient Zero, in which he'll be starring alongside Game of Thrones' Natalie Dormer in the fight against a global pandemic in a post-apocalyptic world where a super strain of rabies has turned most of humanity into infected, a new violent species, which, between you and me, sound a bit like zombies. I think it might be a science-y zombie movie.
Really? So does he play a sort of decent stick... sort of decent chap scientist who's a bit wacky and has got the answers?
I don't know. When was the last time we had a Doctor Who person playing a in a film of that type? It was Peter Capaldi, wasn't it, in I Am Legend?
That's in World War Z.
Oh, was that what it was? Yeah, World War Z. Yes, beg your pardon, yeah. In which he played a doctor for the World Health Organization. So maybe they're continuing this joke. So maybe that's all he is. Maybe he's just in there for a few moments as a doctor from the World Health Organization. Who knows? We don't know that much about it at the moment, other than what I've just told you. So it sounds interesting. Speaking of rabies, Matt Smith's in it, so that element of it's interesting. Speaking of rabies, and this is a Doctor Who link. Speaking of rabies, as you do, I was watching a compilation of the best scenes from Phoenix Nights.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know the Keith Lard one?
You have to refresh my memory.
Remember the fire protection officer who comes in and he gives a talk on fire safety and fire protection, and then he draws a diagram of the club and the exits, and the exits all make the diagram look like a dog. And this guy has been... there's a suggestion this guy's been interfering with dogs.
Yeah.
And like many characters in Phoenix Nights and other things by Peter Kay, he's played by Peter Kay, which is my Doctor Who link for that. And there's a joke about rabies in there as well.
I'll tell you what I was watching this week, as I popped down, I spent a bit of time with Des Skin.
Oh, you name dropper, you.
Lovely old Des. We stopped down at Des Towers for a couple of nights, and we had a late night YouTube session. And he reminded me of the genius of Big Train.
Oh, right.
Oh. And there was a sketch in there, I urge you to look at it, which was brilliant, which was like the Hitchcock spoof based on the birds, but it was all about the working class.
And then Okay.
It's basically it's instead of the birds, it's like a load of sort of working class cockneys all sort of gibbering to each other, going, all right, love, disgrace, all right, love. And every time they look out the window, there's more and more of them on this playground. So in the end, there's like this big flock of cockneys, and they've got to make their way through them. It's utter genius.
Now, for the uninitiated and Brian, what's the Doctor Who link there for Big Train?
Oh, now you've got me, Tinker. What is the big link?
Simon Pegg in Big Train?
Oh, Pegg's in it, yeah, Pegg's in it. Yeah, he's one of the Cockneys, actually.
Yeah, and I think Kevin Eldon was in it as well. And
Kevin Eldon, yes.
Has he done an audio? He's done one of the audios. Was he in Ministry?
He must have done some of the audios, yeah.
I think he was in Death Comes to Time.
Yeah, he's definitely... you know, it's probably full of people.
Yeah.
Frighteningly, it's ages ago now. Must be.
Yeah, was Jessica Hines in it as well? Was she in it?
Yeah, she's in it, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so there you've got Jessica Stevenson Hines there as well. Okay, oh, good one, yeah, we'll put that in the show notes, I think. It's worth having some Big Train in the show notes for our listener/reader. Okay, and let's us continue through our random talking about stuff that's happened lately. There's one more thing we're going to talk about, then we're going to move on to what Gareth's been doing of late. And this is the assertion, when I say assertion, this is Stephen Moffat basically saying, we don't have to have the Daleks every year.
Yeah.
At a one of these recent press events for the DVD launch, or the other stuff that he's been doing with talking about Sherlock and just being a writer and showrunner at large, is this that there's no contractual obligation for the Daleks to appear annually. And is this a case of the Moff lies, or do we think this is a genuine thing? And that it's purely down to the BBC just wanting to have the Daleks in Doctor Who every year.
I've heard rumours of this being a contractual thing over the years, but I've never seen anything substantial to prove it. And I would be surprised if it was a contractual thing, but then I guess on the other side, the Daleks are still your big dog. They're still big part of the appeal. There's always interesting things in theory you can do with Daleks. I don't see why not. I'd be surprised. I think you could quite perfectly have a season without Daleks, and we more or less have had it this year. But then I suppose maybe, well, they had to jump through a lot of hoops to get the Daleks back. I mean, that's all very well documented in the first place. Dalek went through numerous drafts where it didn't have them in it. So maybe there's still that lingering sense that having worked so hard to get them in it, and maybe it does pay off for them in ratings. I don't know. Maybe it pays off in profile. I don't know. Maybe there's just a sense that we've worked so darned hard for it, we're having them.
It could be that, yeah. And then obviously they get their merchandise boost, don't they, for it?
I'm sure it manages to sell lots of little things. Although, I don't know. I mean, how big are the Daleks now? I don't really know. I mean, you know...
three and a half inches.
Not having kids, I don't know whether
they're
all that they wear.
Yeah. Well, when the Moffat says, you certainly don't wheel the Daleks out because you've got a contractual obligation to provide Daleks. Well, I think you do actually wheel the Daleks out if you've got a contractual obligation, but I'll carry on. Okay. For a child, a year between Dalek stories is an eternity. I remember as a kid saying, why haven't they done the Daleks for ages? It's been 4 or 5 weeks. Moffat then laughed maniacally. No, sorry, that's just our addition to that. I would. Do you know what they should do? Right, it's very simply done. Okay, you have the Daleks in the first episode of Series 9 and the last episode of Series 10. Then they're in both series, and it feels like it's been a long time between them.
Okay. Yes. Were they not in Series 6?
In Series 6, which one was Series 6?
I just went through all the episodes because I'm trying to remember. Well, Series 6 is that one that everybody says is awful, which I concur. However, I don't recall them being in Series 6. I just went through all the episodes, and unless they were somehow in The Wedding of River Song for like brief snippets, I don't recall them.
Is there a cameo where one of them crashes? Where he pulls a crashed one out of the rubble?
Yeah, you're right, I remember that.
Yeah.
Which one's that? Alright, so they had like a quick cameo.
Yeah.
Would that, now, if it was a contractual thing, would that be a sly way to appease the contract that year? Would it be written in that it's got to be a proper story? But I mean, if not, it's essentially a Dalek-free season for the most part, aside from that one little snippet. And thank you, Gareth. I knew there had to be something.
Mm.
But honestly, for me, or rather, the next thing I was curious about, too, was it not Terry Nation who, in the classic series, wanted to give them a break so that they didn't get burnt out? Would his estate really have a contract saying every year if he was the guy that already was concerned about them getting burnt out.
Yeah, but Terry's puffing up daisies now, isn't he? It's his.
I think the gaps were that there was one at the late 60s, wasn't there? I think that's because he was wanting to work on his TV show.
The first gap was because he withdrew permission for them to be used because he was marketing his Dalek
in the USA
project in the US.
Yeah,
and then they brought back in 72 David Daleks because and this was, as far as I'm aware, because Terrence and Barry Letts just said, "Oh, we have another Dalek for a while, bring them back." And then suddenly there's a panic because they realised that Terry hadn't wanted them back, and then they cut a deal, and then they come back every year for about 5 years, don't they?
Hmm.
It was pretty much because he was trying to get a series of his own off the ground. It wasn't because he thought Doctor Who was overusing them.
The first time round, yeah. The second time round, though, in sort of 75 to 79, I always felt that was just because they didn't want to use the Daleks.
Bob Holmes was moving away from using... Bob Holmes and Phil Hinchcliffe moved away from the Daleks because they thought they wanted freshness.
Yeah.
That's fine. And then after that, they're in the 80s a lot. I think the 80s, the difference there, as far as I'm aware, is that Terry Nation wrote Destiny of the Daleks, and then after that they managed to agree a thing that if he didn't want to write it, someone else could write it, but they had this whole thing of first refusal to Terry. So
yeah,
I think that's just, it sounds to me like it's just finding a mechanism where they can agree to it. But in the modern era, absolutely no idea. It wouldn't surprise me if maybe there is something in there. But equally, it wouldn't surprise me if there wasn't.
Sure, yeah, I agree. Okay, let's move on. We've been talking. We're actually coming short of time. So I want to know, Gareth Cavanagh,
Yes. What
have you been up to of late that we can talk about that you're happy to share,
Doctor Who-wise
and Warp-wise, yeah.
Warp-wise and Doctor Who-y things. Well, Warp continues to inch forward at the speed of an ant with some heavy shopping.
Asthmatic,
yes.
Yeah.
So it is still happening. What I can say is that I'm still in touch with. We've got two very large and prestigious comic strips to deliver for the piece, and they're taking a lot of time to pull together. The first is a sequel to the Iron Legion, which Lance Parkin has written, and that's
right.
A 24-page strip, gorgeous strip. It's all set 30 years after the Iron Legion, the Doctor returns, and the Iron Legion has been reassembled, so Ironicus is back and Vesuvius is back. But he's gone bonkers, so it's got this sort of real I, Claudius, end of Empire feels lovely, very epic, but obviously taking an age to pull together. Dan McDade's doing the art and the inking on that. And the other one, which is taking a good amount of time to come together, it will be lovely, is Lee Sullivan has been working on the very last Dalek strip, which was not completed by Ron Turner. So this was an 8-part strip which had been scripted and was going to be in Doctor Who magazine in the mid-90s, and Ron passed away before he could finish it. So we've got the first two pages that Ron did. We've got the script, and we've got the blessing of Ron's agents and all of that. And that's going to be done by Lee. But he's doing it in the same style, so he's using gouache and pencils. You know, he's using all the traditional methods that Ron would have been. So that's taking time, but that's moving forward. So it is still happening. You know, occasionally I get these lovely messages and sometimes some grumpy ones. Full of fan titlement saying, when is it coming out? You promised it, you know, 2 years ago. And the answer is, it comes out when it's ready, really.
Yeah.
But it's still there. There's still lots of goodies to share. So that fumbles on. And I've been looking at some theatre projects with a strong Doctor Who spin. Once, very exciting, which I can't talk about yet, but the minute I can... I'll be on here, which is hopefully something that will let us explore some of the behind-the-scenes stories of the 70s, which will be terrific. And that's really exciting. We've got some great stuff. And actually, I was down in London interviewing some people for that this week. We've got some great stories. I've got some great stories. no Doctor Who ones I can share, but some lovely stories about the filming of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. There's someone who worked on that, and it just sounds an amazing place to work, an amazing time to work. And I asked,
I said, "You mean the TV series, not the movie?"
Yeah, the TV series. No, yeah. And it was really, you know, it was really just digging into what made the BBC tick and what made it so special and what kept it going despite all the things that they had that were going wrong at the time with, you know, strife in the country and unions and inflation and the rest of it. And it was down to the brilliance of some of the people who worked there. And I learned an awful lot about crosswords and how integral they are to keeping things going. So, yeah, so I did that. I popped into the timey-wimey convention that Louise Jameson put on at the weekend.
Right.
So flying visit there.
Right.
That was great. Tom Baker did 90 minutes, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, a fabulous performance by all accounts. So I had a little catch-up with Sophie Aldred and John Leeson. Wendy Padbury, who lives in France now, Wendy Padbury does. I didn't know that.
Right.
She's Madame Padbury now. She said that she's doing all right with the French, but her neighbours have got very strong accents, so it's a bit hard. But she's going with it.
I would live in France. Have you seen the property prices in France?
Oh, can you get a chateau for the price of a shed?
Pretty much so, yeah. Some beautiful properties that you can get, like rural properties. You know, the sort of stuff you'd be paying half £1 million for over here.
She said it was dead night, and everyone was very nice to her. And I don't think anyone knows her over there, so she's just, you know, a normal person, so she just gets to relax. And spent a couple of days with Deskin, which is always good and full of witty conversation and great anecdotes. I was told, a brilliant anecdote about Biddy Baxter and the Blue Peter Tortoise, which I must share with you when we're off the air. So, yeah, that's me, really. Life is pleasant.
Good. Any events of a Doctor Who convention variety in the planning, offing?
In the offing. Gosh. Yeah, there's all sorts of things we've put. I've been chatting to the BFI about doing some potential screenings and bits and bobs, which we might do out here. We've got some nice detailed proposals in. Be mostly for things that won't interest your dear readers. Lovely things like Coronation Street and other things like that. I don't know if there'd be a sci-fi spin. It's interesting. Because next year's 60 years of ITV.
Yes.
Which I didn't realise at the time. So I think there's a celebratory sort of will in the air to do some stuff. And that was lovely. And Out of the Unknown is out on DVD this week.
Right.
Which is brilliant black and white BBC anthology series, which is very much stablemate to BBC. You'll see a lot of the same characters and writers and talent. It's pretty interchangeable. Very, very good stuff. And that's out this week. That was everywhere in London. So that was...
Okay.
So there's lots and lots of little treats to enjoy.
Okay, cool. Right, we'll get on to recommendations, as Brian needs to go shortly. And so,
have you got to go to work, Brian?
I'm sorry?
Brian, have you got to go to work?
Oh, yeah. This is my late day, so... It's good for our podcasts, but always means I got to end these things a tad early, which is sad.
Sure. What's the weather like over there, then? You know, because you're in the morning there. Is it nice?
Yeah, no, it's well, you know what, today's going to be 60, so it's going to be nicer today, but lately it's been in the 30s or the 20s, it's been freezing and raining.
Sounds dead pleasant. Here in Manchester, you know, no one comes to Manchester for the weather, and the birds cough of a morning, so it's, you know, it sounds all right where you are.
Really? Wow, so it's worse there then?
Yeah, this is grim and grey. This is, you know, yeah. I'd like to say this is how we like it, but I'd be lying. It's just how it is,
to be honest. So recommendations. I need to get a recommendation from each of us. I'm going to start with Brian.
My recommendation is Dark Eyes 3 from Big Finish. I was able to preview that recently, and
nice.
It's really good. It's very well constructed. It's a little less. All over the place, and I don't want to say that as a bad thing to the other two stories, because the other two stories did a really great job of encompassing a lot of different areas and stories, but this one kind of has a bit more of a focus on the Doctor and the Master, and you know, this the eminence, I guess I should say, and it's really well done. I think if I, you know, have one complaint about it again or one minor niggle about it, it would still be Alex McQueen. I believe that's his name, Alex McQueen, as the master. I'm not digging him as the master, but okay. He does an okay job. It's a good story. They get some beautiful moments. As a matter of fact, there's a moment where the two of them are basically locked up together, and they're just, you know, it's almost like watching Pertwee and Delgado have a scene together again. The way that they just have a conversation like old friends, but with like a hint of disdain in there. It's really well done. Due to recording schedules, Molly has a lesser role in this season, but it's actually very well handled, I thought. You know, all four episodes just seemed to breeze by. They were such a joy to listen to. So I would definitely recommend Dark Eyes 3 for sure.
Okay, great. Gareth, your recommendation, please, sir.
Okay. Well, obviously, Out of the Unknown from the BFI. Lovely anthology series, out on DVD, beautifully restored. A ridiculous host of extras and commentaries that are all pulled together by our good pal, I'm struggling for his name, Toby Haydock. Yeah, Toby's done a great job pulling that together. It is a series that we should never have seen on DVD because it should be nigh on unclearable because there's stuff there from Asimov and all these big writers, which it basically, I think that this will be the only time it's issued. I can't see it being reissued. Grab it while you can or pay hundreds of pounds on Amazon in the future. It's great. Okay. So that would be my first recommendation. My other recommendation, because I've been really enjoying Boardwalk Empire lately, that's right. Made me think about the Decalogue issue, the first ever Decalogue that came out, which has the most amazing, although it's a short story, it's more like a novella, it's about 100 pages, called The Duke of Dominoes, which is a Delgado-only, master-only story, where he's marooned in 20s Chicago, and he's running a prohibition racket, he's Duke Domini, he's a mob boss, and he's got to survive in 20s Chicago, by Mark Platt, beautiful.
Nice.
Both of those early Decalogues are amazing. Decalogue 2 is great. That's got a great story called The 9-Day Queen by Matt Jones. Totally different. It's a Hartnell era historical all about Lady Jane Grey. Beautiful. Most amazing ending. Really is. Now, that's what I'd love to hear John Guylaw read. That would be fab. So they're my recommendations. And, of course, Boardwalk Empire. Amazing. Treat yourself.
Okay. Yeah, well, John's Dr. Omega is very good. Should have mentioned that earlier. So it's a very good reading. He's he's playing a not quite Hartnell, which is fair enough because the artwork on the front is a kind of a not quite Hartnell as well. My recommendation is it's Ripper Street Series 3. I've managed to race through Ripper Street Series 2 last week, and then if you don't know, Ripper Street was cancelled by the BBC, dear listener/viewer. And it's inexplicably, really. I mean, it was a fair enough. It's at the end of series two. You could clearly see it still had somewhere to go. So it's good that Amazon and BBC America joined forces to bring it back. It launched on Amazon Friday before last with two episodes. The third episode has just gone out. I've just and you watch it on Amazon Instant Video on whatever mobile or games console app or on your computer. The first episode's really good. It doesn't focus too much on the crime, but more on the actual the people, because they've all been reunited, and it's 4 years after the end of the second series. So that's adds for some very good character development. Now, Matthew McFadyen's really good in it, and Adam Rothenberg's really good in it, but Jerome Flynn is absolutely fantastic. I can't tell you how much I enjoy watching Jerome Flynn.
Who's the bloke with the beard and the flat nose that looks like he's been smashed in the face with a spade?
Yes. Used to be in Soldier Soldier many years ago and had number one hit singles with Robson Green. That's Jerome Flynn, yeah.
What, with the nose that looks like he's been smashed in the face with a spade?
Yes.
Never.
Yeah?
No. I don't think we're thinking of the same one. No.
Yeah, we are. No. Yes, we are.
Never got top of the pops with that nose.
And it's not, yeah. And it's not prosthetic. No, it really is Jerome Flynn of Simon Cowell Records fame, up on the roof, and
I had no idea about that.
I won't believe it till you post it up in your notes.
It's genuinely Jerome Flynn. Give over.
Are we thinking of the same bloke here?
Yeah, we must be. He did Tommy Cooper on stage a couple of years ago.
Well,
and then he gave up acting for a few years after the music stuff that they did with him and Robson Green did. So while Robson Green was doing Touch of Evil and all that stuff, he was not acting, and he was doing some New Age thing or something. I can't quite
Jerome Flynn, he was the one with the lanky blonde hair and and the smashed in nose, to be fair.
Yes, Well, and they were both in Soldier Soldier. Yeah, yeah.
There's no Fred Miller Band yet, isn't there?
Oh, and on that, hang on. Hooray! Thank you, Gareth. Gareth's not here next week. So on that note, dear listener, I'd like to, and indeed viewer, if you, we do have a viewer. Maybe it's James. Hi.
Oh.
And that brings us to the end of this week's Castobus podcast with a K. I would like to have a round of applause for our special guest, Gareth Cavanagh. It's like Steve right in the afternoon, isn't it? I'm going to stop doing that. Thanks to James for trying to get on this week's podcast. Well, unfortunately, we had some technical issues, which is going to necessitate yet another rethink on the podcast. But we're sticking with being able to fade in the music, as we're going to do in a moment, after I've said thank you to Brian.
Yeah, cheers, Brian.
You're welcome.
Get yourself don't get in trouble.
Yeah, and...
But thanks, Gareth, for being here. Appreciate it.
Cool. James can do the production subtitles for this week, can't he?
Maybe he could. Until next time, dear listener, dear viewer, that's it from us. That was me.